It's 8:28. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Council met last night in the studio with a recap. I have Council Member Becca Gerber. Good morning.
Good morning.
Pretty short meeting last night. I mean, one of the items that you did approve was the King's Crown Workforce Housing Condominiums Ordinance there. This is for the affordable and attainable housing there on the at the project. So how many units are we talking about?
The King's Crown project is actually a great example of developments we'd like to see in the city where they actually doubled the number of attainable affordable units willingly building those for us. So they are doing 7 affordable. So that is 80% AMI and below. And AMI stands for area median income. So it's really targeting workforce and lower, more of the. So I wish I could pull the number of the area median income right off my head, but it's
$100,000 or something.
I don't know if it's quite that high, and I do believe it might be. It's based on Summit County, but it's still aiming to hit teachers, police officers, essential service in town, and really more of our community members that would have a very hard time buying anything in town. And then they're also building 8 attainable units, so that's targeting 100 to 150% of the AMI. So they're not what people would look at and say, oh my gosh, that's supposed to be affordable. They are in the 500 range, but it's a product that you can't find anywhere else in Park City right now. They're 2 and 3 bedrooms, and they're a really nice design. And they're also right at the base of the resort, which is great access for work and play for a lot of people. So we're really excited. This is a great project in our eyes.
Okay, so how does this contribute to the city's goals?
So it will count as an additional 15 towards our affordable housing goal, the 7 and the 8. But the great thing is that we just finished our retreat where we talked about affordable housing, and we really looked at what we have as far as the city lined up, as far as some public-private partnerships that we could do, and some private developments that already have affordable housing units that are set to come up in the next couple of years. And we have a steady pipeline for the next few years, up to maybe 400 units. So we're very excited about the progress that we've made. And we set out to load the pipeline and get some things moving, and we feel like we're really making some great progress.
So are these units for sale, or are they for rent?
The King's Crown units are for sale, and the next few projects the city is doing will be for sale. But we have found a way to fund a rental, some rental projects that are actually we're looking at bonding against the rentals, the rents per se, to pay it back. So it will pretty much self-fund itself, and we're very excited about that because it's actually going to help us move our affordable housing budget much further.
Are these units then, I mean, who decides who gets to buy these? And does it just go kind of into the city's list of
the city wait list, and or? Mountainlands Housing, I believe, will be sending out notifications to those that are on affordable housing wait lists. But I would have to look into this, but I believe that it is the King's Crown gets to run their own lottery, very similar to how Park City Heights gets to run their own lottery. But their criteria are exactly in line with what the city is looking for.
And they would be deed restricted?
They are deed restricted.
Mm-hmm. Even the attainable ones, huh?
I believe even the attainable ones.
All right. Let's see. At the council retreat last year, you were presented with a question of whether staff should look at building outside of city boundaries, where we know we have a lot more open spaces. You were pretty clear, though, that building should really be within the city limits. How come you feel like that?
I feel... Well, let me say that my personal opinion is my personal opinion, but I feel very strongly that if we are going to use tax dollars from Park City, we should use those tax dollars to create future citizens of Park City, people that can participate in our school boards and our Park City boards and commissions, and that can really help make sure that we have people in our neighborhoods and create that feeling of a true community. And I don't want to contribute to sprawl, and I don't want to push... our workforce housing issues and needs out into other parts of the world. I think that we want to have people live in town. That's what makes it a fun, vibrant community. And also, when we look at some of the other reasons we're pushing for affordable housing, is that we have such traffic and congestion issues. So pushing our housing out into other parts of, into nearby areas doesn't really help when we have two corridors that have a lot of traffic and congestion. So for me, it's a very personal and community-oriented reason. But we did talk about taking a look at opportunities as they come up and making sure that if there is something that is just too good to pass up, too good of a deal, that we would work with whoever is bringing it to us and maybe have that conversation at that point.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, I mean, I guess you would be looking at areas where there's bus service or something like that.
Hopefully, that would be that would certainly make a project more enticing.
Yeah. Were you alone on that or...?
I think that maybe I feel more strongly about keeping it in town than others, but I think that most of council was in agreement that, you know, Tim always talks about there's kind of a line and some people are a little left of the line, a little right of the line, but most people are kind of right in agreement with it. We would prefer to have our housing be in town, but if there's an opportunity that is great and we should take a look at it, that we'll take a look and see what if it is possibly feasible.
Yeah, and when we look at some of the just the recent open space purchases, I mean, it's basically property that can no longer be developed. How does that work, though? I mean, certainly we've got a priority of, you know, open space, and yet also, you know, this critical priority of building affordable housing. So if we're buying up all of the land where homes could be developed, I mean, what do we do?
It's a fine balance that we're looking to that we're seeking to find. And I do think that when you look at something like the Clark Ranch purchase, where it was bought with largely open space funds, but they did carve out a section of it and say this area we think would be good for housing or for public works or for a project to be put on. I think that that's how we're going to have to handle it in the future, because we don't want to create sprawl. We don't want to build into our open lands. That those are beautiful areas that we all cherish and value in our community. And there are going to be lots of opportunities for redevelopment within the city. So it's going to be a lot of working with our community partners to figuring out where the best opportunities are as we move into the future.
Yeah. When we look at redevelopment, though, I mean, can we really afford to purchase property and redevelop it? I mean, it's for market property. So, I mean, it's very expensive.
It is.
At the height of the prices.
It is. And we were very lucky that we were able to get the Arts and Culture District and the Homestake Lot over the past few years. And so we're going to make sure that we do use those to the best that we can to make sure we get the best value out of those. And you are right. It is going to be very difficult. But there are opportunities for us to partner with private developers. And we will see what comes up in the next few years. We all wish we had a glass ball that would show us the future, but we don't. And so we'll just have to take advantage of the opportunities as they come our way and make the best choices we can.
Also, you received a preview of the Sundance Debrief. That'll come later this spring. How do you think this festival went compared to previous years?
It seemed like we had a lot of people in town, and I'm looking forward to seeing some of the numbers. It felt like there were, you know, the venues were packed, the streets were packed, and we also had so much snow. But it seemed like everyone had, it was a good festival. I haven't really heard, you know, I know we did have some operational issues in some parts of town with snow removal and some setup. And we did get some reminders from some of our residents about some of the parts of the contract and why they were put in place. And, you know, it's great because we have turnover in this town and on city council and both in residence and on Sundance. And so it really is our... You know, this festival is very organic and evolving and changing, and we want to make sure that we keep it working for our residents. And this year, I think, was just a big, big year. So I hope some of the numbers prove that out, and we see, hopefully it will throw some good money towards our buses and towards our other city projects.
Yeah. Did you have to dive into that $100,000 contract for using additional buses?
You know what? I didn't hear. Mm-hmm. I have not heard yet.
Let's see. Also, council yesterday discussed some recommendations when receiving donations of land for open space. Mm-hmm. I guess the consensus was not to come up with a policy, just given that every case is so unique.
Well, we did agreed on some guidelines to take a look at costs and to look at location and some other specifics. But yeah, this is a very unique situation where someone donates a parcel of land in the community, and some plots are more... have more of a conservation value than others. And so it's something that we're going to take a look at on a case-by-case basis and look at the surrounding neighborhood and what the value would be. But it is an interesting situation in which somebody just donates a plot to the city.
All right. Let's see. The State of the City address was Tuesday. What was your takeaway after that?
You know, I heard some really great feedback that from some locals that it felt like after 2 weeks that were really about welcoming the world and having a bunch of people come into town and getting to use our community, that it felt like a great opportunity to refocus on our residents and what was special about our community for us. And I think that that was my big takeaway, that there is a lot of love and people are very grateful for our community and what's going on here. And we're doing some wonderful things that are very difficult and very complicated, but I think that there's a lot of appreciation when you look at what's going on in the country at large, that we're willing and ready to tackle some difficult subjects.
So are you in agreement with those three initiatives that were laid out, the first being, you know, Love Where You Live campaign?
Yeah, I think it's great to remind ourselves of what's great around town. It's really easy. You know, I think Andy said that people can get kind of grumpy when you feel like you're always kind of trudging through. You forget to look up and look at the beautiful mountains and the sky and all the great things, and you see your friends skiing or you see your friends riding their bikes, or you have a few minutes to catch up with someone at the grocery store. Like, that's that small town feel that we really all cherish. So I think it's good to have a reminder every once in a while, like, look up and look at what's wonderful. And then the other initiative about the car chargers is awesome, because we get those. I believe there's a 75% to 80% subsidy that is going to go away in the next few years. So we're really trying to take advantage of the subsidy to that Rocky Mountain Power is providing to put in 100 additional car chargers throughout town.
Yeah. So is a city going to be providing free electricity, or are we going to start charging people?
That is up for discussion in the future, but we'll have the chargers in place. So whatever we decide to do, at least we'll have that set up. We'll have the infrastructure in place.
Yeah. I mean, just given that we've got a city manager and a mayor that own electric vehicles, that could feel a little self-serving.
You know, I think that one of the points that was brought up was that in the next couple of years that there are going to be something like 60 new models of electric vehicles that are brought online. We do have people that are now, there are ways that you can travel across the country with an electric vehicle. And I think that if we want to be encouraging and being kind of on the right side of history, that it's good to have in place, because it's not going to get any cheaper to add them. If you can get something at 80%, you know, off, you might as well jump on that and take advantage of it.
Okay, and the third initiative was to hire a year-round full-time resident advocate. I mean, why do you think that's necessary? I mean, we're talking at least $100,000 here.
Well, you know, one of the things that we really hear is that it can be very difficult to go through the permitting process through the city. And, you know, we've also heard that some, you know, it can be a little bit cumbersome on an individual if you've never done it before. So our goal is really to provide someone to kind of hold your hand and be like, this is why we're going to go get this permit. After we get this permit, you're going to need to go get this permit. And then also to add for an advocate, if they see something that they feel like doesn't make sense, it will help us to understand how our processes could work better, be less redundant, and help people move more efficiently through our process. So I think it sounds like something that people have been asking for. I've heard over and over, you know, I went and got this permit from so-and-so, and then they said that I had to go get this, and then that didn't work with what they said. And so we're just trying to make it a more smooth process and help provide some background and some knowledge to what permits are needed and what isn't, and help people move through our system happily, hopefully.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think, you know, it was a great 2 weeks of more than 2 weeks of events with Sundance and FIS, and a big thank you to everyone in our community that volunteered, helped everything move along, that survived it, and then a big thank you to everyone who showed up for our State of the City, and we hope to do more in the future.
Okay, Becca Gerber, member of the Park City Council, thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:42. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.